Welcome to The Expert Vet. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Donna Spector, who is The Expert Vet. She's a board-certified veterinary internist here to help explain medical conditions in dogs and cats. If you have a problem that's been difficult to diagnose or treat, Dr. Donna can give a second opinion to help you and your vet keep your pets healthy. Email your questions to radiopetlady@gmail.com. The Expert Vet is a production of 8paws LLC and Dr. Donna Spector, which are solely responsible for its content, and is brought to you by Canine Active, a safe, non-toxic pain reliever with a proprietary anti-inflammatory ingredient, Alpha-G, made of naturally occurring amino acids and homeopathic compounds known to provide pain relief in dogs without the side effects and risks of drugs. Canine Active is made in America by the company that makes Amino Active, proven safe and effective for people with pain who want to avoid ibuprofen and NSAIDs. Now there is Canine Active, an innovative formula for dogs to improve quality of life for the canine members of the family. Canine Active, proven safe and a proven pain reliever. This show is also brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Can you identify what's on the label of your own dry dog food? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. And their new grain-free recipes give you even more healthy choices for your pooch's dinner. And Donna's dream for a super low-carb canned cat food has come true. Halo's new pate-style cat food has an amazingly low 5% carbohydrates. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they emphasize giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com, because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. Hello, Dr. Donna. Here we are on The Expert Vet yet again, looking for your expertise. How are things in Chicago?
Oh, Tracy, they're great. It's always nice to be here.
Well, I have a special guest that I just want to make sure everyone says hi to and gets to know a little bit. You know, one of our sponsors on The Expert Vet is Canine Active. And in order for any company to be a sponsor on this show in particular, Dr. Donna Spector has to check out the company, what they do, how they do it, if she believes it works, if there's good science behind it. So I was pretty happy when you said Canine Active is the real deal. I tried it on my own dog, Jazzy, and it was definitely the real deal. She is the most arthritic creature I've ever met, and she was less lame and less painful using it. So I wanted a chance for Mark Faulkner, who created the company Vireo Systems that makes Canine Active and the human version, Amino Active, to just come on and say hi, and for us to thank you, Mark Faulkner, for being part of The Expert Vet. We really appreciate your support.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be affiliated with you all, and we're pleased that Canine Active is helping some of the older arthritic dogs, and it's certainly a good option to some of the other things that have toxic pharma issues.
So, Donna, you often have, as a board-certified internist, many people send their pets to you after they've sort of reached some kind of a brick wall with their own vet, and often they've been on some sort of NSAIDs, non-steroidal right. anti-inflammatories, and they've either gotten sick from them or they have underlying diseases. Can you just give some thoughts about how valuable it is to have an alternative for pain?
Right. I mean, the options, you know, can be pretty abysmal, especially when you're looking at a dog who has underlying liver problems, kidney disease. I treat a lot of dogs with IBD, intestinal problems. You know,
right.
these dogs are often just, you know, crippled with arthritis. It's tough to get around, but these organ diseases that they have make traditional NSAID therapy very, very difficult, if not impossible. And it's always heartbreaking when a patient where the underlying disease is going pretty well, we've got a good handle on the kidney failure, but yet the quality of life is such an issue because they can't get around because of their arthritis. So having something like the Canine Active product, which is, an excellent alternative to NSAID therapy, you know, to layer into these dogs that, you know, that are so uncomfortable. And, and obviously there's a multimodal approach. We often,
right.
you know, we're either using real, real minimal doses of the NSAIDs. And, you know, there's all sorts of things, tramadol and gabapentin. There's lots of things that we're often using with rehab therapy. Massage, you know, acupuncture, there's lots of things that can be used.
Right.
But, you know, I've enjoyed experiencing the Canine Active product, using it in my patients and, especially those unable to tolerate the NSAIDs. And I've been very happy with it.
And I'm really pleased to hear that, as I'm sure Mark and his partners are at Canine Active at Vireo Systems. But I do want to say, yes, you're right to point out that it might act alone in some dog that just has a bit of pain after an agility course or a long hike. But you have done a brilliant job with helping my own vet, as you do other people's own vets as a second opinion or a support system. Because Jazzy is on all the things you mentioned, but the Canine Active added that little boost of pain relief so that I could give her less of those other medications, which many of us are worried about. And I guess long term, they begin to even work less well.
Well, or arthritis gets worse over time.
Yes, and, right. You know, the combination of both. Right. Mark, the thing I'd love you to explain to us, I mean, Dr. Donna is a pretty smart cookie. She probably already understands it. But I don't really understand how amino acids, in the patented way that you have developed them, how amino acids are a pain reliever. I know that your human product, Amino Active for Humans, which is a cream that I've actually used and was astonished how fast it made my achy, previously injured knees after tennis feel better. But I don't understand, and it'd be great for people to try and understand in lay terms, how do amino acids work positively in this way and yet without any side effects?
Certainly. And I think the core concept that's going on with these amino acids is, and it's really a beautiful tip of the hat to nature, is that these amino acids that we use, naturally occurring, you know, found endogenous to the body and in the nutritional profile of most people, are part of the body's natural healing system. And what we've done is we found that these three particular amino acids, which in a proprietary trade secret sort of way are conjugated, that they particularly, when dosed in this higher concentration, help goose along the body's own natural healing processes for recovery and repair of damaged, or in the case of osteoarthritis, diseased tissue, whether that be muscles, tendons, joints, etc. And so it's really supporting and advancing that which occurs normally, and therefore has no toxicity to it, because these natural processes are just by their mode of action are things that are symbiotic with all of the body's biochemistry. In all of the body's healing systems and processes. So they just simply move that healing process along, and especially in an older dog, just like an older human being, your metabolism slows down, your ability to recover, you know, you're not an 18-year-old kid anymore, or the dog's not a 3-year-old anymore, and all of those functions start to slow down. This provides them what they had previously in terms of the nutritional profile and the components in the body that help it recover. So it's not only helping to repair tissue with pain and inflammation and things, and it acts as an anti-inflammatory because it counters these things, but it also acts to a degree as a disease-modifying agent because it can really plateau and stop the progression of some of the arthritis that, for instance, Dr. Donna just said, gets worse as you go on in older dogs.
And I'm selfishly thinking of me, and Dr. Donna is a real sportswoman too. She's a horseback rider, and I'm a tennis nut. And I've found, and this has gotten worse for me over the years, I rarely took Advil because I was taking a glucosamine supplement for years that really made a huge difference. But when pain has happened, I can't even take one ibuprofen anymore, just even one, even on the so-called full stomach and staying upright. It really hurts. Donna, with older dogs that haven't shown in their blood or their liver that they're having a bad reaction to the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, be they Deramax or Rimadyl or even Medicam, is there any damage or potential pain to their gut just from taking it repeatedly? I mean, in other words, if...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have a many dogs that are, you know, older dogs that are, they're fairly intolerant, that they often don't feel well, they don't eat as well.
Yes.
They, you know, and, you know, there's been some some look-sees into that sort of thing. And, you know, we know when dogs like that get like a scoping procedure done,
right,
you know, we can see pinpoint hemorrhages and ulcerations,
wow,
from NSAID, aspirin, steroid therapy. And we know that those things happen. So the short answer is
yes.
You know, they definitely can have GI toxicity, even if a dog doesn't have underlying, right, major disease.
And it can be causing them discomfort or pain. I mean, I think I need to become an ImmunoActive customer for real, because I can't even take one Advil. If I really hurt my shoulder, right, serving or something, I can't even tolerate as much as one Advil taken, right, in the most protective way.
And so, I think one thing I would want to just point out that I think is so important to the take-home message here is that the non-steroidals, they are anti-inflammatory medications.
Right.
Some of the other alternatives that we're using, you know, like you've talked about tramadol and gabapentin, some of these,
right,
things, these are pain-relieving medications,
right,
of sorts,
good
but
point,
they're not true anti-inflammatory medications. And that's what is so important to really nipping arthritis pain in the bud, is getting an anti-inflammatory, because that's the true pathology. The true disease is an inflammatory disease. So really targeting the anti-inflammatory part, and we have very few options for that. That's what makes Canine Active such a nice alternative, such a nice option, because it is anti-inflammatory.
That's a really, it's a really good point, Mark, because I'm thinking of all these drugs working together, but they only a few of them have anything to do with the underlying causes. Donna said the others are just a band-aid on top. So that's
an
important
thing
to realize.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's exactly right. They mask the pain. And what we've seen with the Canine Active and this special conjugation of these amino acids is that it actually is anti-inflammatory. When we did research, early research on these compounds and did them side by side to the major NSAIDs in tissue cultures, and we inoculated them to create inflammatory conditions, we saw pronounced anti-inflammatory activity with the active ingredients in Canine Active. And so it does go to the root of that systemic inflammation concern that Dr. Donna just referred to.
So, Donna, you know what this makes me realize, and I hope anyone listening, and you already know it because you take such careful care of your own patients. I shouldn't view the gabapentin and the tramadol and even the meloxicam tablet as my base and add on some Canine Active for a boost. It should be the other way around. I should give more Canine Active for that underlying anti-inflammatory, along with the Nordic Naturals fish oil that she's always gotten as an anti-inflammatory, and use those pain, they're really just pain meds, more sparingly in times of more pain or more exercise, and view the Canine Active as the thing that needs to be on board the most. The others are almost an icing, if you will, on a cake.
Right.
So that's a really good distinction. Mark, thank you so much for coming and explaining that and for being part of all the wellness and advice that Dr. Donna dispenses both on the show and in Chicago at her clinic. Thank you so much. And we will talk to you again sometime soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're going to have a quick sponsor message, and when we come back, Dr. Donna is going to talk about resistant bacterial infections, something that has come up with a reader who wrote into us with Gretel the Blue Wine, and of course, that's near and dear to my heart. We'll be right back after this quick break. This show is supported by Spot Platinum, an allergy test that can help pinpoint which elements in your pet's environment or diet may be causing his allergies. Is your dog or cat constantly scratching, itching, licking? He may have allergies that the Spot Platinum blood titer test can detect, and for which they can make a USDA-approved serum that is custom-tailored to your pet's specific allergy results to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done over 500,000 allergy tests during 25 years, a blood test that measures a pet's reaction to 90 common airborne elements in foods. Their mission is to give reliable results, effective treatment, and unparalleled customer service. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. And support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple blood titer test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. VaxaCheck is useful on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked. And shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxaCheck eliminates the need to unnecessarily revaccinate a dog whose immune system is already protected. VaxaCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And ask your vet about the new VaxiCheck titer test for cats, too.
We are back. Dr. Donna, thanks for helping me understand. Do I have a thick head or what? It's like I take in this information. I'm like, I got it. Oops, I took the wrong fork in the road. I really am going to double the canine active and take away the tramadol by half and see how that works.
And, you know, and just as just a kind of to flesh out that process, you know, the pain control is such a complicated thing to do, and it's so individual dog specific. And
yes,
many times we, you know, trying to replace one thing with another, you know, so often they need over time, a dog needs, unfortunately, more and more and more. It
right.
often isn't able to, we aren't often able to drop out certain things.
Right.
And so, you know, it's, I'm just going to tell people, it is important to work with your vet, with your individual dog, because it's a fine cocktail, if you will. And, you know, and
if
one thing isn't a perfect replacement for another.
That's a good point. And even my own vet, who you've now worked with, had said to me, I was giving her 2 gabapentin twice a day, which is a neurological drug that can make you dozy and dopey. And she said, how about doing only half as much of that and more of something
right.
else? And it did. It perked her up a bit. So here's our letter from Heather in Houston, Texas. My rescued blue Wyme Gretel developed what looked like a rash on her abdomen. Her regular vet prescribed antibiotics, and they seemed to help for a little while. During the summer, she developed large red welts on her abdomen, and the abdominal skin felt almost hot to the touch. After a couple more courses of different antibiotics, antifungal meds, and corticosteroids, there was no change. I went to a veterinary dermatologist. He performed expensive allergy tests. I don't know if it was Spot Platinum. That's one of our sponsors. Turns out Gretel was allergic to everything, and he gave me allergy meds to inject every week, which is something you and I need to talk about,
mm-hmm.
you know, how that's conducted as a, mm-hmm. as a process. Months went by. Gretel's red hot welts were still there. Notice months went by. This reminds us of Scooby-Doo and how many months mm-hmm. I went through before mm-hmm. you said, hang on, get the hardware from his TPLO surgery out of his knee.
Mm-hmm.
I was referred to a different veterinary dermatologist who finally determined the source of the welts was a bacterial infection that was extremely antibiotic resistant. A long course of seldom used, old, expensive antibiotic finally worked. My regular vet is now very reluctant to prescribe any antibiotics for Gretel for anything. And then she says, thanks goodness for pet insurance. Anyway, I love your show, which I catch on podcast. Thanks for all of the great information you provide. Well, you're very welcome, Heather. And this is a great chance for Donna to help people save months of suffering for their dog. And maybe, mm-hmm. I don't know, that the infection gets worse and worse over time.
Right.
And you know, everyone's suffering and everyone, are they going down the wrong path?
Right. Well, you know, probably the, you know, just to give a little bit of background, because when we start talking about resistant bacterial infections, you know, everyone, it's kind of causes a big freak out because everyone, of course, is thinking of some of these flesh-eating bacteria
yes.
and MRSA infections
yes.
and, you know, it's very scary to hear about resistant bacteria. But one thing I will say is dogs have staph bacteria all over their entire skin. It is normal. It should be there. It's always there. The staph they have, and not that it's that important, but it's called staph pseudintermedius. And, you know, over 50% of dogs have it, you know, all over themselves. They're just colonized completely with this bacteria.
Wow.
And that's really different from people who normally carry staph aureus. So dogs carry what we call SP, standing staph pseudintermedius, and people carry SA, which is staph aureus. And that's really important because when we start talking about resistant bacteria, MRSA, which we call MRSA, is what people get. MRSP, not MRSA, MRSPA, if you will, MRSP is what dogs get. And it's really important because MRSA is horrible. It's a horrible problem in people. It's really a huge problem. And they can spread it. People spread it to people, to dogs, to cats. Everybody can get colonized, and they spread it back and forth, back and forth. It's a disaster. MRSP, MRSPA, that dogs get, is rarely going to go into the human population. It's not zoonotic. It's not like, oh my gosh, my dog has a MRSP
right.
infection. I'm going to get it. Then I'm going to pass it back to the dog. Then it, you know, it's not like that. It's not nearly as zoonotic. It's not nearly as much of a health concern as MRSA. Dogs almost, not exclusively, they can get MRSA, especially if a dog ends up with MRSA infection, you need to be looking at the people in the household. Yes. Because that dog got it from a person. If a dog has MRSP, it just got it from its own bacteria. That's normal. Okay. Now, just because a dog has a resistant bacterial infection, it doesn't mean that that dog is more likely to get infections. It just means when they get them, they're going to be harder to treat. They're going to be harder to get rid of. So my take home is always, if your dog has an infection, be it like Gretel, a skin infection on the belly, an ear infection, a bladder infection, a bone infection, any infection at all, and the first round of antibiotics, because again, staph is what we expect in most infections. Staph is super common. But if your vet says, yep, it's likely a staph infection, they give you one course of antibiotics and it doesn't work, or it seems to work, and then the moment you go off the antibiotics, right, the infection right is back. Culture, culture, culture. Culture, culture, culture. We have to culture we have to take a skin culture, a bladder culture, some sort of culture to identify, is it truly a resistant bacteria, and what antibiotics is it sensitive to, so we can nip it in the bud right there.
So when we say resistant, what you mean is it's resistant to the most commonly used antibiotic for the most common infection, which is a staph infection.
Right. And not only commonly used antibiotics, these bacteria are resistant to uncommonly used antibiotics. They are resistant. Like when I get my lab report and they test 20 antibiotics, you're lucky if there's one that it might be sensitive to. And of course, we have in our pockets some of these older antibiotics that which are not being overused.
Thank God. Okay?
And we still have them in our back pocket because they have other potential side effects. But, you know, in a crisis scenario, we have to use them. And I think that is a really important point to bring up is we as veterinarians, myself and my colleagues, we cannot overuse antibiotics. You know, if we aren't exactly sure of what's wrong with a dog, we shouldn't just be prescribing antibiotics, because overusage of antibiotics is causing a problem with bacteria developing resistance.
Well, let's think of hotspots. One of the big issues with canines, you know, pick golden retrievers just because I had one and she would get hotspots from time to time. Whether it was a flea bite or not, I'll never know. But they always gave antibiotics and then steroids.
Right.
And so there must be millions of dogs being given antibiotics and steroids for a hotspot, and that may not even be the appropriate thing for that hotspot.
Well, unfortunately, when you get a hotspot, there's a huge break in the skin.
Right.
It's a huge hole a lot of times.
Right.
The bacteria, the normal staph that live on the skin, invade and they cause an infection. So actually antibiotics do have to be used.
Okay.
But again, the point being your general antibiotic that you would pick for staph, you know, usually is appropriate in that situation. But if it doesn't respond or it comes back right away, that's when you might be dealing with a resistant bacteria, and then you have to culture it. But the whole point is, and we've talked about this before, why does Gretel get the itchy welts on the belly?
Right.
Why does the golden retriever get the hot spots? Why do labs scratch an itch and, you know, chew their feet off? Many of these dogs have underlying allergies. They have allergies to the environmental pollens, to the grass, to the trees, to the dust mites in the house. They have allergies to, or they may have thyroid conditions, or they have food allergies, or they have a true underlying disorder. So I think it's really interesting to go back to Heather's email about Gretel. You know, just to kind of break it down, she says, you know, I was referred to a veterinary dermatologist who did these expensive allergy tests, and turns out Gretel was allergic to everything. You know what? Gretel still is allergic to everything, and she should continue on her allergy shots, because that's what causes the itchy red welts on the belly.
Right.
Those were actually bacteria that were resistant, yes, because that's what bacteria she has on her body. But even though that infection was treated, she's just going to get another infection down the road, because if her allergies aren't controlled and she's not put on fatty acids and allergy shots and all the other treatments that she's going to need to control her allergies, the next time she gets a skin infection, it's going to be the same resistant bacteria.
There is a cascade that goes on.
Right.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd love to talk about some of the things that you recommend people do that have these highly allergic dogs to keep this from boiling over, whether it might also be oral antihistamines. I don't even know. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, those of you that have very allergic dogs, stay right by your device, and we're going to give you the answer. I'm back with Dr. Donna Spector, the expert vet, and we're talking about bacterial infections, many of which are antibiotic resistant, but we're also talking about a very allergic dog. Now, before you tell us the sorts of things that maybe one can do to keep that dog from breaking out in red welts, and maybe it's seasonal or not, when Heather said he performed expensive allergy tests, the spot platinum test, which is one that we think highly of because it's been used for 25 years and it tests 90 environmental and even some foods, although it's been agreed, I think, by you and others that food is not really reliable to test that way. When it said Gretel was allergic to everything, I remember when I first got Maisie and she had this horrible diarrhea and we ran a spot platinum test just to find out, you know, she moved from Virginia Beach to Vermont. And there were some things that were flagged as a reaction. But can you explain why some of these things that might on an allergy test show as a reaction are so de minimis that one should ignore those and only pay attention to the ones that are giant red flags?
Right. And, you know, most of these tests have a number attached to them.
Yes.
Like, let's just say the cutoff is 100. I'm just using that as a random example. You know, if you've got a dog that has a blood sample that says 105, 105, versus one that says 1,500,
right.
You know, obviously, we can look at that rationally and say, that looks like it might be a little more important.
Right.
Also, you have to look at the environment the dog lives in. If the front yard is filled with cedar trees and, you know, and it's saying there's a cedar issue on the blood versus, you know, the dog may not live anywhere near palm trees or this or that. And, you know, so it's just environmentally, if your dog lives, you know, the allergen has to be in the environment to make sense.
Yes.
You
know? Or they have to have at least passed through it. And I know that when they ran the first spot platinum test, it is geographical and they ran it to her old geography, not her new geography, which is sort of ironic.
Right.
But I guess that's one of the fine tuning issues is what are you testing for and where is the dog and how is the dog living?
Exactly.
So if they showed her allergic to everything, now I think allergic to almost everything in my dotage. It gets worse and worse and worse because as you've pointed out, once you are that person or that dog, you begin to react to more things. You obviously can't have allergy medications that are made up that cover everything. They have to pick the ones
that are
just like
worst.
You said, the worst ones.
Right.
So is there something else in addition to these injections, which are pretty low key, right? I mean, you could almost do it yourself if you can get over the squeamish.
We teach pet owners. I teach them all the time. Allergy shots generally are always given at home. I mean, they're really simple to do after you get used to it. But, you know, environmental, when we're talking about the environmental allergens, obviously, you know, like the HEPA air filter system, you know, in the house, especially in the room where the dog sleeps, that's a really, you know, just a way that you're filtering out those particles, the allergen particles. I commonly have my dog owners cover the bed, the dog bed, their own bed, whatever bed it is, in a hypoallergenic sheet. Because if you think
I'll
about the
darned.
Fleecy dog beds that, if you're lucky, maybe get washed once every couple of months, or if it's a big dog, rarely at all because the bed is huge, bigger than your washing machine. So, you know, those beds hold a ton of allergens, not to mention dust and mites, but also whatever the dog had on the body outside comes in, lays down. Now that allergen is all over the bed and then they sleep and breathe it in all night long. So I always recommend a hypoallergenic sheet that can be wrapped around the bed, wash it every couple of days. You know, you put it in the
just
laundry.
Throw it in. And almost the dryer is the most important part, nearly even more than the washing, right? Doesn't that kill off stuff?
Right. And if it's a smaller dog, use a pillowcase, stuff their bed into a hypoallergenic pillowcase.
Yes.
That really seems to help. You know, again, in the high allergy seasons, watch the pollen counts. There's news sources all over. It says pollen counts are high at this time of day and this time of day. Don't go out for a walk during those times of day. Brush your, you know, wet your dog, have a wet towel next to the door. You can brush down the dog's coat. Just, you know, run it over the dog, the feet.
Yes.
You know, it just, those things, you know, really do decrease pollen loads. Those
and
things
face, right? You said that once before, a damp washcloth where you wipe down their chin, their nose, because they've got their nose down, they're sniffing, it's fun, but they're bringing in all of that pollen and bugs and whatever right on their own face.
And crazy stuff, but like, don't let the dog ride with the head out the window, blowing, like injecting pollens right into the eyes and nose. You know, those kinds of things are, you know, can really help decrease. And then of course, medically, you know, we've talked about fatty acid, you know, how fatty acids decrease the inflammatory response. Antihistamines, absolutely, they work well for some dogs, not as well for others.
So you would use that, like I have Benadryl around for if my dog were to get stung. Everyone should have Benadryl at home for that if you get a sting.
Right.
But you could also use it, obviously, your vet tells you the right amount for the weight of your dog. If you know that you're going to go on a long walk and it's a really alert, like now, you know, ragweed, at times that it's just, there's horrible things out. Can you give that? Do you give it before the walk so that the histamine reaction doesn't take place?
Right. I mean, you can. Yes, you certainly can. And some dogs, you know, do better to take antihistamines every single day during their high allergy season. You know, and Benadryl is one, but, you know, Claritin and all sorts of things dogs can take. Yeah. So it's, you know, we've moved up the antihistamine scale a bit. Some things seem to work a bit better for the seasonal allergies. So, you know, those are important, you know, all important elements to control. But, you know, just kind of going back to like Gretel briefly. So she's a dog with environmental allergies. She has those. There is no getting around that. But her skin has been colonized with this resistant bacteria. So if she does get a break in her skin barrier, because, oops, I got a little itchy. I didn't, you know, and she bites into her skin, that can turn into another resistant bacterial infection. So I just want to point out, the resistant bacterial infection is not the primary problem. It's secondary to her allergies.
Right. And that is her life condition.
Because Heather's email sounded a little bit sort of on the negative side, like I went to a dermatologist and they performed all these expensive tests and that wasn't even the problem. But it is still the problem.
Right.
And that still needs to be addressed on a daily basis with fatty acids, with all these things we're talking about,
What about if her skin is totally colonized, as you point out, many dogs' skin is colonized with just the regular staff. Mm-hmm. I remember back, I've never heard the word, the product Physahex talked about, but back when we were young and people used to use it for acne and stuff, can it, and it was an anti, I think an antibacterial skin wash, it would washing down the skin of such a dog frequently, would it mess up the pH? Would it actually wash off some of this terrible colonization, or is it resistant to even something like the equivalent of Physahex? I'm sure there's a dog version.
Right. And, you know, in people, they still, for decolonization procedures, you know, they still are doing some of the washes and rinses and what have you. We don't do it as routinely in dogs because the reason, in all honesty, is because the zoonotic risk to a person is so low. But if you have MRSA, the human pathogen, and a whole household is colonized and the dog is colonized and everybody's colonized and they're passing it back and forth, you betcha decontamination procedures like that go into play. And that's when, you know, I work a lot with physicians, human physicians that are treating people to really get rid of MRSA in a household. But that's the, if there can be good news about the canine resistant bacterial pathogen, the MRSP, is it's a low risk. It's a low risk to the people in the house. And most often the dog is, you know, even if they're colonized, they're usually completely asymptomatic and healthy.
Right. So
it's only when they have an underlying skin allergy, thyroid
disease. Gretel does. So if she's as devoted to Gretel as she seems to be, I mean, pet insurance is awesome. I couldn't function without it, but you're still paying a lot out of your own pocket, depending on what reimbursement you choose.
Right.
She might very well be the person who would happily wash down with, if you can think of a product that comes to mind to decolonize her skin, I don't know, three times a week. She lives in Houston, Texas. It's hot and warm most of the time.
Right.
You can do it. I mean, my garden hose, one of them is for dog washing and it's half hot, half cold, but I'm sure Gretel wouldn't even mind if it was cold, or you just take her in your stall shower.
Right.
Is that a good idea?
Yeah, it can be, but you know, again, it's just like when we talk about arthritis and we talk about everything, getting to the root of the issue is always the better plan. Because if we can keep her from getting the infection, that's what I want to do, because so many dogs are colonized with it, it's impossible to get rid of it all.
Okay.
And she may walk down the street to her friendly neighbor dog who also is colonized with MRSP.
I see.
And she's going to have it back in 10 minutes.
So there's no real barrier you can put. A little dog in a bubble isn't going to work.
Exactly. So, and the more you expose these bacteria to different medical products, they're going to become more resistant even to that over time. So again, my goal is to say, let's return Gretel and her allergy issues to as normal as possible and treat with the environmental control, the bedding, the air filters, the anti-inflammatory fatty acids, the hyposensitization allergy shots, keeping her from getting these breakouts because we can't keep her free and clear from these resistant bacteria. I mean, they're everywhere.
So this is a really important message to anyone who has dogs with these skin allergies and then they turn out to be resistant. It is manageable, and it just takes an awareness on your part of what to do to lower the flame on the situation. Donna, thank you so much. Always so much to learn from you. Look forward to talking to you again very soon. Thank you all for listening.
Take care.